You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. We're here at The Comedy Cellar. My name is Noam Dorman. I'm here, of course, with my partner, Mr. Dan Natterman. Hello, Daniel.
Hello.
And right now, our guest at the table. You want to sit down, Stephen?
Stephen can have a seat.
Right now, I guess the table is Mr. James Altucher. He's a financier, former hedge fund manager, and author of 21 books. That's remarkable. He is partial owner. I have to say this?
Yeah.
He's partial owner of the New York City comedy club Stand Up New York, and is a stand-up comedian in his own right. And I keep wanting to come see him perform, and I haven't done it yet. And then we're going to be joined
You're
by Roy
welcome
Wood.
Welcome anytime.
We're going to be joined by Roy Wood. In a few minutes.
By the way, Noam, James also is a podcaster, as we are, and he's been getting... What's the name of your cast?
It's called, very originally, The James Altucher Show.
And he's been getting some kick-ass guests. He should be an inspiration for us.
Noam Dorman is a kick-ass guest.
You also had William Shatner recently.
William Shatner, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
How do you get those guests?
You know, if you ask 1,000 people, 10 say yes.
Well, that's what Steven does. He asks like one a week, and then if they say no, he complains he couldn't
get a guest. In 1,000 weeks, I'll eventually get somebody good.
I have a great podcast producer who I think you met when you were there, and he literally sends about 100 emails a day.
Oh.
Like, we just booked Wyclef, and after a year of asking Wyclef to come on the podcast. So it's just persistence.
Well, I discovered today that a person that I've been asking for over a year is finally ready to come on the show. I don't want to give any name. I emailed you her information.
Padma Lakshmi.
Yes.
Why can't I say that?
I don't know. In case she cancels, I don't want to get the hopes up of our audience.
I went to a wedding with her in Iceland once. That's my only, I had to say.
With her?
Well, not with her. It wasn't like
she
we
was.
Were
was she on your arm?
She was sitting a few seats down from me. It wasn't a crowded wedding. It was in Iceland.
Is she as striking in person as one would believe?
She's definitely striking, yes.
James, by the way, just broke up with his, and you authorized me to bring this up.
Yes.
I saw a picture of James with this hot blonde, and I said to myself, you know, it's definitely better to be a man in this world because, you know, Altucher, with all due respect.
Just, my name is Altucher, so that gives me a leg up right
there. Oh, like Chris Gethard.
Yeah, I mean, you know, physically, Altucher is, you know, he's not,
right.
You know, he's not a fashion model, nor am I, by the way. But this chick.
Did you just insult my looks? Did you just make it because I look Jewish? Is that it? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I guess so.
Go ahead.
But the point is, he had a smoking hot chick that he broke up with. So this is the power of being a wealthy man.
Well, I think also it's the power of when two people are together for a while and they're not necessarily elevating each other in the way you would want. It's not like I'm 20 years old, I'm 50. I'm looking at, you know, the rest of my life. So you make decisions based on that.
But the point is when you're a man, you don't have to be good looking. When you're a woman, unfortunately.
What are you saying?
I'm saying you're fine, but you're not at the level that this young lady was.
That's fair. I will say that.
Dan, can I ask what percentage of a man's attractiveness would you say comes down to how much money he has?
Well, you know, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know if it's that money itself is sexy or
because
that
you seem to place a great deal of emphasis on James being rich as opposed to him being a nice guy, personable, able to carry a conversation, that sort of thing.
All those things matter, but obviously, that's an interesting question. I don't know if it's the money or it's the brains and initiative that it took to get that money that's sexy. So it's sometimes it's hard to parse that out. Anyway, Noam looks like he's...
No, I'm listening to this.
It's hard work to work hard, you know, and so it builds character.
Well, you have a girlfriend now?
We just broke up yesterday.
So when you meet a girl, do you lead with your resume hoping that'll interest her, or do you try to play it down so you can see how you do when she's less knowledgeable about who you are?
Well,
follow the question, right?
Here's the question, is that who does, like you, for instance, when you meet somebody, they probably know right away, oh, it's Noam Dorman, he owns the Comedy Cellar.
He's married, yeah, it's a hassle.
It's the same thing, like, you know, I had once, you know that book, The Rules, that was so popular in the 90s about dating? Yeah. So I had the woman who wrote The Rules on my podcast, and they said to me, try to date someone who doesn't know who you are. Like, don't date someone in media, don't date a fan or a reader, and I should follow that advice. I haven't yet followed that advice.
So, no, I used to do that. I would meet a girl, you know, that didn't know who I was or whatever it is. Think I was a customer or something like that.
Yeah. So usually, the people I speak to usually already know who I am. So that's kind of my problem with dating. I should kind of seek out a different world.
I'm not gonna lie to you. It's going to be a little more challenging.
No. You know what? I don't think he's right.
Okay,
by the way.
Well, maybe I'm not.
Actually don't think he's right. And I think that. But you would not have any doubt. In that way, I think women are. I mean, obviously, there's shallow people in all sexes, but I think for the most part, if they meet a nice guy and you're personable and they like you and you make them laugh or whatever it is, they're not immediately thinking, well, how much money does he have?
Yeah, and also you could see usually by their past, who do they go out with? Why did they leave that person? There's a lot of evidence that people leave behind now. You know, it's not like people come out with a clean slate. Like, oh, someone might have used to go out with Elon Musk and then broke up with him for whatever reason, and then I can see, okay, she's not purely going for a billionaire or whatever. You know, there's tons of ways you can see evidence that they're not just going for one thing. People go for many things. They like you were saying, they want a nice person. They don't want someone who's going to be mean to them. They want someone who's going to elevate them in personality and in their careers and so on. And you want the same thing in a relationship.
I was never good at the elevating the other person. How do you do that?
I think you compromise with them. You help them with their careers. You give them advice where you have experience and they don't.
Talk down to them, you mean?
Yeah, sometimes.
Mansplain is what you're telling me.
You have to do it in a gentle way so they don't get defensive. If someone's too defensive, they might not be the right person to elevate you.
Yeah. I don't know. Go ahead. You want to say something, Steven?
Well, Dan, do you lead with the fact that you're a stand-up comedian?
No, I don't lead with
America's
that. But unless I meet somebody at the Comedy Cellar, in which case, you know, they know it already. But no, I don't lead with that. But you know, some
people
do. You
can lead with the fact that you have a law degree.
Yeah, well, I don't lead with that either. You know, I usually just lead with.
Do you take credit cards? Sorry.
All right, that's a good one. No, if I meet people, it's often here at the Comedy Cellar, so they know already.
That's the thing, you know?
If I meet them on Tinder, I think it says on my profile I'm a comic. I'm not sure if I actually put that on there or not.
I've never used any dating apps. Those things work?
Well, they do work, sure.
No, we're 50.
I'm not quite 50, but
49.
I'm getting up there.
It's just like your formula about getting guests on your podcast. You know, you swipe for 1,000 people, they work.
Well, the thing is, though, no. I read, and a friend of mine was telling me about how if you swipe right on just everyone on Tinder, then it gives you a certain score, as it were, which drops you
a
to
swiper.
The swiper. Yeah. So if you just get on and swipe right on everybody, then
the Door of the Explorer, something about swiper.
Hear that, but that could be.
And it makes sense if you're the type of guy who swipes on everybody.
I have the Tinder where you can only swipe a certain number per day because you got to pay extra for the Super Tinder, where you can swipe unlimited.
Right, Tinder Plus.
The best thing is virtue signaling. So you have a pretty girl who likes you, who introduces you to her friend. Then they don't have to swipe right 1,000 times.
That's not virtue signaling.
Yeah, she's signaling to her friend that.
Yeah, but that's not how we use the word virtue signaling.
That's how he uses it.
Okay. I'm defining it.
By the way, Noam, he's being part owner of a comedy club. I'd like to. We know how you feel about Louis. You've made your position clear on numerous podcasts and so on.
All Louis all day. Go ahead. Here we are.
Well, I think I think it's fascinating.
No,
you know?
Of course. Go ahead.
I'd like to hear James's opinion as a club owner on what... Has Louis been to Stand Up New York or tried to get on
No,
there?
I know, obviously, he's been here a lot.
That's because his booker said publicly that she didn't want him there.
The booker did write publicly that she didn't want him there, and I love our booker. I totally respect anything she says, but if I were there and Louis C.K. showed up, he's going straight on the stage. He's a funny guy. Now, is he judged by the world of the comedy courts that he shouldn't be on a comedy stage and do his job? No. And there's such a thing as due process. If you don't want to see him, you can walk out. There's so many ways to punish a person, and nobody has officially said, oh, no, Louis C.K. is not allowed to do this by law because of what he did, which is all, you know, I'm not saying it's speculation what he did because he admitted to what he did, but I think there's speculation as to, you know,
He admitted to parts of it, and other parts he did not comment on.
And I think there's speculation about what it means. Does it mean he's a weird guy? Does it mean,
clearly,
you know, he's a sexual deviant? That I don't know. People do weird things. And so clearly he's a great comedian, one of the greatest of all time. And you could the markets will decide if people want to see him. As long as he hasn't broken a law, the markets will decide if people want to see him or not on a stage. He's a great comedian. Does that sort of answer it?
Devil's advocate argument here. And I had this conversation with my parents right before I came here, so I'm primed. All you're doing by allowing Louis C.K. on the stage is perpetuating a cycle whereby white, straight, entitled males are allowed to do whatever they want. They can commit heinous acts against women.
So if Louis were black, then we should let him on?
There would be more of an appetite.
What I'm saying, could anybody say, listen, it's okay. If he was black, it's okay. But a white guy, you're going to let him back on?
If he was black, then at least you're dealing with someone who has a history of repression in our society.
I don't want to be devil's advocate here, because this is going to be absurd. What I'm saying is that...
Well, these are real arguments.
But, like, football players are regularly, like, being called out for beating the shit out of people, and then they go on Sunday and play football. Like, no one's stopping them from doing their job because they did something we don't morally approve of.
Well, I made the point. Mike Tyson came out of prison for rape, and he was embraced immediately in Hollywood and Broadway and theaters.
And clearly what he did was wrong, but also we have a philosophy of redemption and going. He went to jail. His freedom was taken from him, and he paid. He paid what a judge and jury thought was the right amount to have some redemption for his crime, which was heinous. But Louis C.K. is not even going to jail. The only jail he's in right now is that some people feel he shouldn't go on a comedy stage. And people are entitled to have their opinion on that.
Yeah.
But so, I think I would love to see him. Call me next time he's at the Comedy Cellar. I'll come right down.
Okay, so I will. I did a daily podcast, the New York Times daily podcast this week or last week. And, you know, they edited me in a way that I didn't think was proper at all. And they ambushed me and all kinds of stuff. But anyway, the podcast seemed to come out very good. I got a lot of positive feedback. So if anybody's interested to know, you know, what my principled reasons are, you can go to that New York Times podcast. I've dwelled on it so many times already. But I do want to say one thing new about it, which is last night, I had not yet seen Louis on stage since he's been back. The first few times I wasn't here. And then when I was here, I felt like I might make him nervous or in some way, like, you know, become part of the dynamic in the room if people saw me there watching him. So I decided to stay upstairs. But yesterday I went downstairs to watch him. And now maybe this is wrong, but it just occurred to me how small, like how do I put this? Like the world, it's a huge, like literally a worldwide happening. But then when you go downstairs, it's like 95 people in this tiny little room, and this dude is telling jokes, and everybody's laughing, and you're saying, this is the whole world is locking arms against what's happening down here, as if this is a monumental, and all this talk that I hear about online about how we are about rape culture, and Noam Dorman is so powerful, and we are the patriarchy, and it's all a big myth. We sell falafel and hummus or whatever it is, and we have a tiny little room, and Louis goes on, and if people like it, they don't like it, and we have no power you're a comedian, no power in the industry, and we can't break anybody, and we can't blacklist anybody, we can't do nothing. And they just overlay this whole, I don't know, mythology and fantasy on it, but you go downstairs and you watch it, like, oh, this is it. Like,
it's just a guy on
just
stage,
a guy on stage
telling jokes.
It's a tiny room. He's like, oh, you know,
telling,
the whole world is upset about this?
Telling dick jokes, basically. That's what comedians do. So, yeah, right. So 100 million people say read the New York Times, and all these people have their judgments and their opinions, which they're entitled to. But at the end of the day, you're running a business, and if everybody's laughing at a comedian on stage, and he hasn't been tried in a court of law, and I don't understand how many more opinions there need to be had on this subject.
In the end, the audience speaks. Anyway, we're joined by Roy Wood, is a stand-up comedian and correspondent for The Daily Show.
Hello.
With Trevor Noah. And he
How
is,
are you?
I think Roy is going to be... Ray Romano's here. Roy is going to be... one of the household names of comedy within the next couple of years. I think he's unstoppable.
Well, thank you.
I think you are a juggernaut. And that is basically a feeling that's widely held by a lot of people. I don't know if you're aware of that. Somebody just today was telling me that on the phone. Like, oh, my God, this guy is just, there's nobody like him right now.
Man, I write my jokes. I try not to be an asshole to anybody.
No,
that's
but you've got
pretty much mine.
So, and Roy is going to be hopefully prominently featured on our new Comedy Central series that airs this Friday. But what I want to talk to everybody about now that we have Roy, this Megyn Kelly thing.
So, blackface.
So Megyn Kelly said, to be fair to her, that, you know, when I was a kid, we could, you know, white kids could dress up as a black character and black characters could dress up as white guys. She used whiteface and blackface. And, you know, if somebody wanted to be Diana Ross, it was okay. And she got attacked basically as a racist. Is that a fair way to describe what they called her? And so I had some thoughts about it, and I want her...
Wasn't she just here the other day, by the way?
Yeah, she was just here the night before last. I have some thoughts. I want to run it by Roy. Because
was she in blackface?
No. because I see this as part of something really bad in the world where everybody immediately wants to take the worst possible interpretation about a person and make that what it is. And obviously, it was a tremendously stupid thing for her to say because of the history of blackface. And by the way, in my lifetime, not just blackface, although blackface, I think, was clearly the worst example. But like on F Troop, there was a Chief Wild Eagle, was this Italian guy, and Jews with hooked noses playing Fagin and Oliver Twist, and Jerry Lewis doing the bucktooth Asian guy. These were all mockeries of ethnicities, and I think, and you know, they'd have the black minstrel with the banjo and the lips, and it was just a horrible part of American history.
I think the other thing Megyn Kelly said, though.
Wait, let me spin out the whole point, and then I'm gonna let you talk on it all. But I think that there's a flip side of that where she's saying, well, you know, if a little kid today admires Barack Obama. He says, I want to be Barack Obama. And he said, no, you can't do that. And essentially saying that we can't distinguish between the mockery of another race and somebody wanting to dress up as something because
earnestly
they
believe that,
or like my son, who's 3% African American, so I guess now technically, if he wants to be Black Panther, you know, like he doesn't know, and so it's tremendously ignorant of what she does. But can it be racist in someone's heart to say, you know, I'd like to be able to dress up as these people I admire? Is it fair interpretation? Well, that you must hate that person. You must hate that race. Like, no, I don't think you heard me. Oh, you know what? I'm so stupid. I didn't even realize all the other baggage that kind of thing has. I'm a jackass. I stepped on the third rail. But understand, it wasn't racism. I did it because I want to be that. And the final thing I was going to say is that maybe we need to somehow find a way to let go all our associations with the past, lest they continue forever. Meaning maybe in some way we do need to find a way to let a little white kid dress up as Barack Obama. Maybe we can trust ourselves to tell the difference between mockery and hate and admiration and stuff like that.
But was she saying blackface is the same as dressing up as Barack Obama? I didn't care.
No, she didn't get into it. I'm just saying, I began to really think about this issue. I said, well, how will we ever break out of this? I said, well, one way to break out of it would be as a society to say, you know, all right, let's not teach these kids to have the same associations of history that we have. It you know, just like, you know, these scientific studies where how do you cure depression? Well, if you smile, all of a sudden you get happier. You know, like maybe if we could approach the post-racial world with a little kind of take a little risk about it, maybe we'd get there in a certain way. Because if I have to tell my little kids, no, you can't be Barack Obama, you can't be Black Panther, I'm teaching them something that I don't really want them to learn about race.
So these
I'm just spinning out. So I want to give Roy a full open canvas to say anything about this issue. I think it's very interesting.
Is that racist because he's the only black person on this island here?
Well, I wouldn't dare talk about this unless it was a black person here, but that's the world we live in, you know? Go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like there were, with the Megyn Kelly thing, she did talk about, oh, back in my day, da-da-da-da-da. Okay, cool, fine. There was a lot of shit that was flying. There was a lot of stuff that was flying back in the day, which was fine. But she also said she felt like even if it was something that was offensive, Halloween should be a day where you let it slide, basically.
I didn't see that quote.
Yeah, there was a continuation of it. We can pull up the transcript.
Yeah, but can you pull it up, Stephen? Yeah.
I think that for what Megyn Kelly said, it's dismissive to the people who see offense in it.
Yes.
So the problem, and I'll start with the end point, which is teaching people a different type of reality as it relates to race. I agree with that completely. The problem is there's still people putting on blackface for the sake of mockery. Everyone doesn't do it in peace. Everyone doesn't do it out of a sense of respect to Obama or Diana Ross. That's right.
But
Black
we
Panther.
Can tell the difference when we see it, can't we?
We can, but then...
I meant that as a real question.
No, I know, but I'm saying to a person that's triggered by that, to the 60-year-old black person that sees that, and they don't have that filter. Everyone doesn't come up in the same America. And I think that's the problem we live in, because we live in an existence where we have to it's like a peanut allergy. Where, one person on the plane has the allergy, there's no peanuts.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy.
We can't have peanuts up front and no peanuts in the back. We don't have time to figure out which row where the peanuts, period. And that's probably an extreme place to exist, but as opposed to the contrary, which was even more extreme and more oppressive, I just think it's where we are right now.
How do we get out of it? Is it forever?
There's been plenty of white people that have done black characters without blackface. These people have done Jay and Beyonce. I could pull up the pictures. There was a whole thread on
Black
Twitter.
There was that movie Soul Man. Remember that movie Soul Man?
Yeah.
Gene Wilder.
Yeah,
also,
you put that out now.
James Toback, I think, was the director.
Yeah, but I'm saying at the time, people weren't triggered by
it. What about Fred Armisen as Barack Obama?
Just look up the thing. I want to get the trend.
Yeah, Armisen never did.
He never put on blackface.
There was no blackface.
There was a movie, cool Tropic Thunder, where
Robert Downey Jr.
With Richard Pryor. Gene Wilder put on blackface. Mm-hmm. We bad.
The worst one, though, was where there was actual consequences, was Ted Danson and Whoopi Goldberg. Yeah. I forgot what event
it
was.
Yeah, it was like a luncheon or something.
Yeah, Ted Danson went into blackface, and that almost like
ruined his
career.
Yeah. Well, look.
They ate him
but
up.
He was purposely doing the blackface. He was saying the N-word. He was really trying to be, for lack of a better word, edgy. I mean, you know, but even then, I don't think anybody thought he was racist. They just thought he was extremely disrespectful.
I'll give anybody where blackface and racism is concerned, because I've stepped on the third rail a couple of times with LGBT.
Not about Jews.
No.
Like
I said, I was on Colbert and I said something about the LGBTQ community. Yeah. I spoke positively of them, and someone ate my ass up for not saying LGBTQIA. So I legitimately did not know. And now that I know that at intersexual and asexual, but there's other stuff. Don't you do that to me. I'm not stepping on that rail again. Go educate yourself. It's not your job. It's not my job to teach you about that. No, but that's real stuff. And so I will give anybody the benefit of the doubt. If you say you didn't know, all right, fine, you didn't know. But where Megyn Kelly is concerned, we got to look at the offender. We got to look at someone who's also said, Santa Claus is white, deal with it. Jesus is white, deal with it. We have to believe women, but then turn around and dump on the Kavanaugh accuser. So there's a lot of inconsistencies with her.
Let me read the transcript because you're right.
Okay.
So Melissa Rivers says, if you think it's offensive, it probably is. Whatever happened to just manners and polite society? And Megyn Kelly says, but on Halloween, you've got guys running around with fake axes coming out of their head. It's going to be jarring. So I don't think that's a.
Yeah, she continues on.
Well,
you made it.
It's a similar situation with your argument about being able to use the N-word, and that some people use the N-word, the full word, white people, without meaning any harm. They might be quoting somebody, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And you said they shouldn't be castigated for it, and they shouldn't be, but they should be told and reminded that some people will be offended.
No,
by
I said something more than that. I said that we've actually gone backwards on it in some way, in the sense that Howard Stern used it in interviews George Carlin used to use the word on stage.
Stanhope uses it.
That people used it, A, when they were quoting what someone else said on stage, that the word was always off limits to be used as an epithet, but it was never off limits just to utter it as like somebody calls somebody the N and they'd say the word. And I said that I didn't understand that. I think that, and now that the final stop on the station is that if somebody quotes the word in a conversation where they're talking about the fact that it was bad that somebody called somebody it, then they lose their job simply for uttering the word, even though the intention was
to report information.
Or to complain about racism.
Correct.
Well, and I said that at that point it's become ridiculous to me.
But, right, but so, if people are offended,
let James in.
Well, I was in the middle of a set.
No, you. Yeah, but he.
You've been talking about the
to Dan Natterman.
He doesn't understand what it means to be the host. Go ahead. Good.
Oh, so what I was going to say is, Noam, how would you feel if on Halloween, since we're talking about Halloween, if a German kid was dressed as Hitler? So similar, I was arguing it's a similar kind of thing. It's a triggering costume that could be considered offensive.
Well, Dan, you want to take that?
Funny to sound.
Yes, it would be offensive. I mean, I you know.
What would you do, though? Would you say that person was being anti-Semitic, or would you say it was offensive?
I would give the person the benefit of the doubt that he didn't mean anything by it.
Didn't one of the princes do that in England, dress up as a Nazi?
Harry, I would give him the benefit of the doubt that he didn't mean anything by it, but just as the case is in blackface, I might kindly tell him that, you know, a lot of people aren't going to like this. You might want to consider other people's feelings.
So you bring up an interesting point, though, which you mentioned.
But I don't
briefly.
Agree with that. Hitler itself is an evil anti-Semitic character, so to dress up as Hitler, can't be because you admire him.
Dress up as the Grim Reaper.
But if I see somebody and I've seen it in like a Hasidic Jewish outfit on Halloween with a payas and everything, I don't care. I don't take that as an insult at all.
Even though there's still people who praise Hitler as a be-all, end-all philosopher on world issues.
Yes. No, what I'm saying is that if you dress up as Hitler, you're immediately suspect of trying to make the point that you love Hitler.
What if you're not? What if you're dressing up as Hitler because
I wouldn't be triggered.
Like the Grim Reaper.
I'm not triggered by that. You see that? You saw movies.
That's your choice that you wouldn't be triggered, but some people would. But here's the other thing, too, and this is the thing with Megyn Kelly, and you briefly mentioned it, and this is the sort of person, this also describes the sort of person who would dress up as Hitler on Halloween. We're in this society right now, everybody's polarized one way or the other, but everybody is also assumed to be rational and polarized. The reality is some people are just stupid. Like, Megyn Kelly is probably just less intelligent than most people.
How many black friends do you think she has?
She probably has no clue.
Lifetime total black
friends
over under.
Do you think she has? I don't
know. No. I know her a little bit. I know better, quite well, friends of hers who are not even white. Well, I guess they're white. I don't know. They're Hispanic. So, they adore her. I have to say that. But I think Roy may also be right that if you live a certain life where you just don't have that experience, that's how you end up saying something that sounds really ignorant, like you did about LGBTQ.
I'm slow to say racist, because if you don't know, it could just be ignorant to the point.
Yeah.
It might not be something you do, but you don't see a problem with it. I don't know if that makes you a racist per se, but it's, hey, here's an opportunity for a teaching moment. But the reason why they come down on her so hard is that she's on her 14th strike at this point. That's part of the issue.
Not 14th racial strike, but...
No, but in general.
14th intelligence strike.
Well, see, like she thought NBC would be some sort of control-alt-delete on her whole history of ignorant, sane, crazy, outlandish stuff. And it hasn't been. People don't forget. And that's also part of the issue, is that anything you've done lives with you forever now, because we're in the digital age.
But I would so much prefer, I would so much prefer that if the cultural natural reaction would say, wait a second, Megan, what you said is wrong. And the head of NBC said, tomorrow we're going to have some people on and we're going to discuss this. Now let's start calling her a racist, use it as a teachable moment. And it's because of this, and I've been through it, everybody's afraid to say the wrong thing. You're afraid to, in good faith, say something that shows that you don't, and it's a horrible time to live in.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Right, people are afraid on every side. Like, you're afraid to say Bill Clinton is guilty of Me Tooing women as well. You're afraid to say, oh, Susan Collins is not necessarily an enemy of all women just because she made a speech supporting Brett Kavanaugh.
Well, the left is not afraid to say anything they want.
They're not gonna dress like Hitler, probably.
No, but Sarah Jeong can tweet, you know, all white people can die, whatever. You know, I mean, there's no Joy Reid can say whatever she wants about, you know, basically. They give you a pass on the left, like Ted Danson, essentially. I mean, Ted Danson, there was controversy, but if that had been a right-wing guy showing up to a party like that, he would have never gotten up off the mat. You know, they gave him the full benefit of the doubt because he's a left-wing Ted Danson.
And he was he dating Whoopi at the time?
Yeah. And then they broke up. And to your point, though, like NBC maybe should have done that, like had a kind of a teachable moment, and that would have been good entertainment. But that's not NBC's job anymore. NBC's job is to be this polarizing alt-left, just like Fox is polarizing alt-right.
Well, that's what they did this morning with Megan. They had Roland S. Martin on, former CNN commentator, and they had the whole proper blackface argument with black people, which if there had also been like a black producer, just somebody backstage on Monday to go, hey, maybe you should bring a black person on to have this blackface discussion, then maybe you don't step in that, or that teachable moment happens in real time. Because a lot of the problem with a lot of what triggers outrage culture is that there's nobody on that dais in the moment to attack, to clap back. Like if you watch half the stuff that's said on CNN, half the shit that they say on CNN, when they're Don Lemon and there's three boxes and box one and three are attacking box two, go check box two's mentions online. There's no outrage. Can you believe he said that? Because someone on air checked him in that moment. So the moment doesn't become some Twitter moment. It doesn't light a fire on the internet. All Megyn Kelly trended until the end of Monday Night Football.
Yeah. Are people more intolerant now? We see it because of social media and Twitter. But, you know, back in the early 70s, if you, you know, the nation was polarized about Vietnam, the nation's been polarized about civil rights. Are people more polarized and more intolerant of opposite point of views, or are they just louder because we have Twitter and Instagram
and
Facebook?
I think there's more views to be, like in the 70s, there was Vietnam. Now there's like 70 different things that are Vietnams.
You know what's lost in the quick turnover, the 12-hour news cycle, as I call it now, is that the nuance to issues is lost. Like with Vietnam, like if you want to speak out about Vietnam, you had to go to the protest, you had to read an op-ed, someone had to write a thoughtful piece that you read. There wasn't a quick link to some bullshit Russia clickbait nonsense, or we weren't a culture that only read the headline in the first paragraph and kept it moving. You had a legitimate discussion and you had a real conversation about the draft or about how veterans should be treated when they come home from Vietnam. It was never just all yay or all nay.
I agree. And journalism could be a little dull and dry because you bought the paper for a quarter and that you didn't have to sell the paper by some fancy headline or some titillating story. So it was a little higher brow.
And there's a little bit of confirmation bias. Everyone's buying just what's going to agree with them.
Absolutely.
So, and you know, nobody.
A lot of confirmation.
The alt left is not watching Fox and the alt right is not watching MSNBC, except, like you said, if it's not chopped off that moment, they get a chance to be the Twitter mob against Megyn Kelly. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying Megyn Kelly was right. I'm just saying she's probably not that intelligent, is my guess based on what she said. I don't know her like you know her.
No, I don't know her. I don't know her very well. As I said, I know
friends. Doesn't seem like an intelligent thing to say. Like, oh,
it's stunning that you can rise to that high level of polite society, kind of, and not understand that even if you want to say such a thing, you need to really lay it out very carefully, like I kind of just did. Like this is, I understand exactly why this is so upset, but I was thinking, well, but she didn't.
But why would you think that if you've never been checked? If you're on your 14th strike, you ain't never been thrown out the game.
And also, that assumes that people rise up at a journalism company through merit, which is not necessarily true.
No, I used to watch her on Fox.
Nah, she's good.
She was quite good and very smart. I think she's editor of a law review. She's not a dopey woman. She's not.
So then, but to say Santa Claus is white and Jesus is white, that's
not... Those were
Jesus
jokes. Santa Claus is a fictional character that's portrayed, that has been typically portrayed as white, and I think he comes from Swedish folklore.
Turkish. But the funny is,
all the white people in Turkey.
they're Caucasoid.
Everybody Turkish I know is white. Yeah, I mean white. People I've known who are Turkish, they don't look Middle Eastern. I mean, I'm sure there are some who do, but like white, like Jennifer Golby, used to be married to this guy Zeki. He was Turkish. He looked just like you.
You're looking at me.
Yeah, I mean, like your
skin tone.
It's your skin tone, yeah.
My skin tone.
So I think Turkey is more European than I don't even know. Nor did Megyn Kelly know that Santa Claus was Turkish. She just thought Santa Claus was like a European thing, you know.
I just don't buy her genuineness in the mornings. I'm not going to get into critiquing news shows that I watch every morning, but I just think that she's a person with a long track record and probably didn't deserve it for this one, but you earned it off all the other stuff you didn't get dragged.
Like OJ.
Yeah, even money. Yeah, you didn't deserve
nobody goes to jail for 10 years
for stealing your own trophy.
Yeah.
But you had this
one
coming. Some
real strikes, yeah. OJ. All right, well, you know, it's funny that this kind of proves that so often, if Roy and I had this conversation on Twitter, it probably could get pretty
well,
awful.
You know what would happen? 40 more people would jump in with no knowledge of the context of the previous tweets and immediately start arguing and fighting and yelling, and then it gets twisted, and there's no... That's what sucks about Twitter. Twitter is having a logical conversation with a person on the train, and then three more people overhearing the conversation, but they only heard parts of the conversation, and they immediately pick a side, and they go on attack. And that's what the internet is set up for, but that's what clickbait does, and that's what drives... clicks, that's what drives profits,
but
is
also,
giving
also,
people something to argue.
There's a different agenda, too. Like, we're sitting here because we're talking about issues, and some of us know each other, and others know each other. Twitter, it really is a mob. So people go on Twitter to fight and to cause problems. It's a different agenda. That whole company is built on people arguing. They make ad dollars the more stupid people are on there.
And let me amplify. And by the way, I think that in the end, Roy and I basically don't even disagree on this past issue. But let's say we all, with our friends, with our best friends, if you get into like a little friction through email, you get very nasty very quickly.
Because it's not face-to-face. Because most of communication is in person.
So I won't argue in email almost ever anymore. But imagine now you're with strangers, and it's 100, or it's now 280 characters, whatever it is. This is like perfectly designed to bring out the worst in everybody in the world.
And you have people who have your back. It's like being in a bar argument, and then just 10 strangers come up, yeah, bro, get them.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm with you, bro. I got your back, bro. Tweet back. Let them know.
I've engaged in a few little Twitter conversations with people commenting on this daily podcast I did, and it's just like, I was so nice, and they're just so mean. It's like,
it's awful. They'll threaten to kill you.
I said, why didn't you talk about the Louis victims? I said, well, actually, we did three long podcasts with all the female comedians and all the female employees, and another one. I said, but the host never asked me these questions. I would have been happy to talk about it. And she came out, no, you should have brought it up. It just shows your patriarchal, blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, you're criticizing me for something that was out of my control.
I already hate you before I talked to you, so there's nothing you can present.
I said, won't you give me any credit for the fact that I actually spent hours, you know, trying to be transparent, talking to every woman in my world? No. And you could read it online. Just so nasty. I'm like, I'm realizing, what am I doing?
You can't engage. You can't. That's the sin, is engaging. You could spend time with your kid instead of engaging on Twitter.
I'm sorry, Roy. What's this guy, Simon, the author we tried to get? What's his name?
There's
a writer. You might know him. He writes about comedies. Seth Simon, Stephen Simon, something Simon. Simple Simon.
I'm looking right now.
And he writes about comedy, and he writes very viciously about the Comedy Cellar, and very viciously, like he said that Jay Oakerson's some joke that was reflective that
Seth Simon
that Jay is sympathetic to rape culture. This is what he said about Jay Oakerson. So I'm like, well, why don't we get this guy in here to talk about it with him? You know, like, cause we always like to. And he wrote back like a really.
He writes back, no thanks. Good luck mitigating this PR crisis by prolonging it.
So like he has no. So I sent him another email actually, hoping that he would come. So he has no interest in that. He wants the ability to snipe. He doesn't want to take the risk. In my opinion, but I don't know. Maybe this is not being fair to him. Doesn't think he wants to take the risk of a conversation.
Because is he more likely to get a 6-figure book deal by arguing with you anonymously like that, or coming in here?
But the point is that I hope that he does reconsider, and I hope that anybody who disagrees with us would contact us and want to be on the show. I think it's very healthy to talk about
things. Why do you think they don't want to talk to you? Do you think that they feel that you're set in your opinion and they can't change your mind? Is that... Because what's the purpose of conversation other than dialogue and gaining new information about the other side? And if they feel like they know what you're about and who you are, do you think that's why they don't sit down?
I think there are various reasons. First of all, to credit some people, like, what was the name of the woman from The Atlantic?
The woman who was on our show? I forget. I know who you're talking about, though.
Anyway, like, she wrote a really negative piece about us, and I invited her on, and she couldn't have been more wonderful, and we just had a great conversation. I conceded some point to her that I had. Remember, I said I think she got me on that one. Like, it was really nice. So some people really are open about it. Other people, I think, suspect that they'll get a beating.
I do believe that dialogue promotes progress on all issues.
Absolutely.
No, do we want to? I think we should discuss something very significant happening here at the Comedy Cellar. This Friday is the premiere of This Week at the Comedy Cellar. Which is where headlines...
11 p.m. Comedy Central.
Where headlines become punchlines. It's a weekly stand-up overview of the week's events, and comics go on stage and talk about the week's events in a stand-up format.
Yeah.
And they've been taping it around the corner. I had a question for you about
that. Yes, sir.
Now... the audience comes to the show. They make reservations. They come to the show. They pay the normal cover, the normal drink minimum, etc. And what they're seeing is not a normal show. They're seeing comedians do new stuff that that may or may not work. Also, comedians are talking about the same topics because since it's a topical show, every comedian's talk. I go up and I say, "Hey, do you hear Meghan Markle was pregnant?" The next comedian goes up and says, "Hey, do you hear Meghan Markle was pregnant?" Which could be fascinating to certain people, but. Do the audience, when they make reservations, know that this is what it is? And have you had any feedback, negative or positive?
Well, it says on the website that that's what it is.
It says on the website.
The first week, people may not have been, they might have made reservations prior to the time we put that on the website. I mean, I'm not totally happy with the way it's been going. And I think that's more of a problem of the way that we've communicated the format to the comedians, then it definitely is not the comedian's fault. But I think that as we get the hang of it, it's going to feel more and more just like a regular show. I think some of the comedians felt too much pressure to like just spend the whole set running the topics. But, some people have been...
they gave us a little more. I did the late show last night. I think I went up at like midnight, and by then, or at least I got the note, do your set. Put in where you can the stuff that you want to talk about.
It went better, I bet.
But the thing is a guy like me,
yeah.
Comedy Central's not on my side. I'm not one of their favorites.
I'm kidding. Go ahead.
if I want to get on the show, because what they're doing is they're filming everybody. This is for the audience that's listening at home that doesn't know how this works. They're filming everybody doing their set, and they're going to use what they want to use. Oh, here's a good joke about so-and-so, or we've decided we don't want to discuss... theoretically, topic A, so we're going to use topic B. Unless I cover every topic, I probably won't get on because I need to maximize my chances. And in order to maximize my chances, I need to have as many jokes on as many topics as possible because I don't know what topics they're ultimately going to go with, and I don't know which jokes are going to work.
Yeah.
And if I'm not one of their faves, and they do have faves at Comedy Central.
Yes, they do.
I'm probably not going to get on unless I make a set every single joke is topical. And I have to be honest, this is not enjoyable for me. It's a lot of pressure. But I feel like I have to do that if I want even the slightest chance of getting on that show.
But Dan, let me ask you a question. What about the writers of every late night show in existence ever? They all have to write just the monologue for the host that night. They have to write all topical jokes.
Right.
So they're not going to be like stand-up quality jokes that have matured for years, maybe.
Right, but the problem is we have an audience that's paying to see the show that wants a killer show. At the same time, we're trying to make a show that's topical.
But what we need from the comedians is to find some middle ground there. You may, if in your mind, you're not going to maximize your chances, I actually don't see it that way. I think if you lead with your two or three best jokes, the ones that aren't so good anyway, they're never going to get on.
I don't necessarily know what's going to be good or bad until the audience.
Well, you might. Well, maybe you don't. But the two or three, the topics are get chosen in the end. First of all, I'm trying to move the format already. I'm trying to move the format away from being a straitjacket on the comedians. I'm like, really, just talk about anything that you find funny that went on this week, and we'll find a way to fit it into the show.
That's more loose and less pressure on the comics.
That was the initial concept of the show. But as it got taken from me and it got shaped in ways without me, they're very much putting in blocks. But I think everybody's beginning to realize now that that's going to be a little too harsh. So there's that. And then, you know, the blocks are going to be formed by who had the most funny jokes on a particular subject.
Do you see?
But I don't know which my jokes are going to be funny until I do them. But so I have to do 10 of them to get two of them.
Yeah, but you still have to go over. Otherwise, you can't get
I know.
Booked.
What I'm saying is you're saying I shouldn't devote my whole set to topical jokes, but I don't know which topical jokes are going to work. If I don't do 10 topical jokes, I'm not going to get two great topical jokes.
Yeah, but I'm telling you that I'm going to start telling Esty that we can't book the comedians who are not being effective at serving both purposes in the show that night. They need to be effective at serving the purpose of entertaining the audience, whatever that takes, even if it means cutting your losses, you still get paid, and also fitting in your topical jokes. Still got to go over.
Okay, well, if that's
it's going to be the marching orders. Good.
The marching orders, then that's what the marching orders are.
So my approach to it, Dan, has been I don't have jokes about everything. Like, of the topics for this week, I think I talked about, so there was Migrant Caravan, the Halloween, Mega Millions, World Series, Saudi Arabia. Like, there was like celebs boycotting the Super Bowl. Like, out of all of that, I had three topics where I go, that interests me. And I know I can go on and on about that. So I'll carpet bomb one topic Godfrey did 8 minutes about the lottery.
He's
just the lottery. So, guaranteed, if no one else gets a lottery joke on, Godfrey, he's getting a lottery joke on because he had killer joke after joke after joke about the lottery. Or my approach is to find three things that I actually like and give a damn about, or find the one topic that I have the alternate view that I know no one else will take. And then you have to put me on because I'm being a contrarian. So you can put on all the other comedians that go, I will not be on the Super Bowl. And then you end with me going, I would happily do a Super Bowl commercial. It has nothing to do with the game. I would happily be on at halftime. Like that, like taking that, for me, that's how I choose to keep from being stressed about, oh my God, I need a joke about a dead journalist in Saudi Arabia. I got nothing. And I'm not going to even try.
Really? Not even a funny topic like that?
I didn't want that topic at all.
Nothing.
Well, I what about the Canada marijuana legalization? I have my joke that, you know, that killer joke.
Why didn't
about,
you do it?
I did do it. Oh, I did it last night, but now I'm being told that maybe they don't want that topic on.
I don't know. I want them to choose the topics that are provocative, the topics that would make us argue. I don't like the bland topics like a Halloween and stuff like that, but some people do have some good Halloween material.
Well, if you got good Halloween material.
If I'm just speaking freely as a seller regular, I think to honor the essence of this building is to have issues with which there are no easy solutions.
That's right.
And that there is debate. There's room for debate. Otherwise, why are you going to the table? I don't want to watch four comics talk about Meghan Markle's pregnancy at the round table, which is also going to be an element of the show, not just stand-up, it's people.
Well, Roy, I'll tell you, maybe surprisingly, I think you have more pull right now on the direction of this show than I do. And if you would make that opinion, because it's almost verbatim what I said in some of these calls. If you got that word out, I think they would listen.
Well, because my concern with doing the show years ago, BET used to have they would do Best of Comic View. They would have Comic View. They would show BET showed like 30 comedians a week, and at the end of the month, they would just pull the best jokes on the same topics. And what I remember from that back in the day was it was all entertaining, but everybody was forgettable because everybody just had a hodgepodge joke about an issue. And it wasn't an issue where there was serious right side or wrong side to it.
Some sparks.
Yeah, and I think that's what you have to have. It has to be stand-up that really opens up the sinuses. And
like that. So, Roy, what's an example like this week? What would be three topics this week that you could see sparks?
The Super Bowl boycott, for one, for sure.
But not everybody's an open-up-the-sinuses kind of comic. I mean, Dave Attell doesn't open up sinuses. Yeah, he's just plain brilliant.
But we need that for ratings. We need to be
open. You need that as well. I'm not saying everything. You don't have to. It's not left-wing, right-wing humor or whatever, but it has to be. My concern is just doing general jokes and being clipped together with other comics all doing general jokes, and there's no point of view. There's no opinion. There's no real direction. It's just
bland.
You... it can't all be bland. You mix in the Attells, you mix in the Todd Berrys, and then somewhere in there, you're dropping Andrew Schultz on their ass, who you know is going to be coming all the way. You drop in a Bobby Kelly on their ass, who you know is going to throw a curveball.
I'd like to use Nick DiPaolo.
Yeah. Trump administration considering officially defining gender based on genitalia at birth. That's a tough topic to cook in 6 days.
When did they stop defining it? And they never told us when they stopped
See?
Doing that.
Joke. Right there. Joke.
I always thought they defined, like I had a baby not long ago. They defined him based on his dick.
Well, they say it's a boy or it's a girl.
Yeah, they didn't ask me.
The question, though, is that that's a touchy subject.
Yeah.
If you're the producer and you go back in the edit and no one has a great joke on it, do you just put up jokes that present both sides for the sake of honoring the tradition of what the seller is? Or do you put the funny...
But is that what the tradition of what the seller is? That could well be and should be.
I think it's part of the way you explain it.
I think you're right about the show this week at the Comedy Cellar. I'm not sure that the spirit of the Comedy Cellar is what you're saying. The spirit of the Comedy Cellar is putting on funny people.
No. There is very much what he's saying. Like, what made the tough crowd and all that.
Well, that was
tough crowd.
I'm talking about what goes on downstairs here.
No. Well,
but they're showing the table too. Yeah. You're showing the comics at the table, which is what tough crowd. That was the genesis of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's part of it. I agree with you, Dan. Like, it still has to be about the jokes. We are making television. Jokes make people laugh. That's because then we start drifting into, is opinion more important than punchline? Which I don't buy into. If we start talking about the philosophical arguments about comedy and whether or not it's okay for it to be deep and not, like, no, there should still be some damn jokes. But if it's just all just,
well, let me make the following
easy
argument.
Jokes.
The regular topics like comedy, there's so much comedy at your fingertips now. Netflix, what is it? Why are you going to watch Comedy Central 11 o'clock on Friday night? It's like watching live sports. It's got to be something a little sinus opening about shit that's going on right now. It's got to be a little controversial. You're not going to tune in to hear jokes about Halloween. You're just not. It's just not. I got to get home and hear those general bland jokes about
anything.
I'll watch it on demand. Like, why bother?
The debate should have been about blackface, and that's where you build the jokes around.
I wanted
it's blackface.
That. So
what debate?
About Megyn Kelly and blackface in general, or whatever.
Hopefully, people talk about that. So we'll end kind of this. It's kind of, I told you flat about this. I got an email today, and I'm going to read it to you guys. You tell me what you think. And this actually happened. This is because of somebody told a joke that somebody was offended on during this show. So, I'll try to. Where's my answer? Please know I'm neither conservative nor liberal. I'm a registered independent. Who registers independent? Anyway, who votes based solely
on
Anderson
merits. In 1980.
Merits 1980. Issue. Having said that, I'm compelled to say whoever the stand-up is in your TV commercial, I guess they mean show, that mocked the Holocaust with a despicable line about Trump making Jewish Americans want to go back to Germany is absolutely reprehensible. I'm a full-blooded German whose grandparents immigrated here from Germany and carry great shame about the horrible suffering inflicted on the Jews by the Nazis. Anybody who makes light of the slaughter of innocents by trying to exploit it, they are amongst the scum at the bottom of the ocean and don't deserve any time. I suggest that you glean the material your guest comedians plan to use beforehand. This woman should be blacklisted in comedy entertainment arena for her cold lack of sensitivity to an issue that should be eulogized, not laughed at. Shame on her.
Wait,
and shame on her and shame on you. 7 exclamation points.
This was for the commercial for the Comedy Central show that they're talking about?
Either that or they came and heard the show. You're probably right. It probably was the commercial. They ran that joke as the commercial. Now, what would you answer an email like
but
that?
But tons of comedians make Holocaust jokes, abortion jokes. I mean, there's lots of, like, topics that people get offended by. What are you supposed to do? It's a comedy club.
What would you answer? I always answer our negative emails.
I would say it's a comedy club. This is the safest place in the world. An actual racist is not going to go on the stage of a comedy club and say their thing. They're going to go off and shoot people or whatever.
I want to know what the joke was before I answered.
He just said the joke.
What was the joke?
It says Trump is so bad he makes Jews want to move back to Germany.
Okay.
What do you say to that? How are you going to explain this comic?
It's a comedy club and people don't have to go if they don't like the
jokes. As a business owner, I understand it.
Yeah.
But as a lover of comedy and trying to explain it to someone, that email is way that the length of that email tells me you're never going to get what that type of comedy is.
But they're both the same thing. Like, a comedy club owner is concerned about the market. So if everybody was like that, he wouldn't allow comedians to say that, because then no one would show up at the Comedy Cellar. But the reality is, if the jokes are funny, and I don't know if that one was funny or not, but if the jokes are funny, then the market decides if that's the joke's good enough.
But what do you do as an owner? Do you now reprimand the comedian and say, hey, send me a transcript before you go on stage? Like, no, what, and what would the comics say?
The markets decide if the comedian's good.
Yeah. So you want to know what I wrote just for the hell of it? I wrote, I understand your feelings, but let me say a few things. One, in my opinion, you should not feel any personal shame about the Holocaust. You were born innocent, and although I'm Jewish and have a close connection to the issue, I'd be ashamed if I were to act as if any German alive today is somehow tainted by it. You're no more responsible for it than I am. Two, comedians say what they want, and sometimes it doesn't work or it comes out too harsh and it needed to be modified. We don't blacklist people in the industry, and if there's anything you should feel shame about, it's to suggest that we ought to. What a horribly authoritarian, over-the-top suggestion for a single offensive joke to end someone's career. Three, I'm not ashamed of myself, nor should, and I mentioned the comedian's name, be. And I say that even though I didn't like the joke either, and I completely understand why it made you feel uncomfortable, I'm happy to speak with you about this on the phone if you'd like. That was my answer.
Don't speak to this person on the phone. Come on.
They usually won't, but I will. I will.
Come on.
But Roy's point is...
You're fighting the ocean.
You're fighting the ocean. That it's reasonable to respond, and your response was great.
I wouldn't change a word of it.
Right, your response was great, but Roy's point is this person is not going to change. They're just an angry person.
But this is where you guys are not... Well, I say wrong. After having a lot of conversations, people have come at me. 30-40% people will actually, just how we talk about, the worst they are is in the email. You got them on the phone, they hear your voice, and you can actually, like, the guy who came at me first about Louis C.K. and went to the Times and complained about it and all that, we became friends. That's a different situation,
by the way.
We did.
That was somebody who was in the club, right?
Yeah.
This is a person
who... No, I met him through a nasty email. And I said, why don't you call me?
Right,
and we spoke, and we became friends, and he apologized.
But he was actually one of the 95 people sitting in the club.
Yes.
Whereas this person is one of a million people seeing a commercial.
Flipping the channels.
You changed one person's mind out of a million who saw the commercial, maybe, or maybe not, 50-50.
But all of those million people felt the exact same way this guy did.
Wait, but who cares about it if this guy has a bad opinion?
I try not to get cynical. I'm saying, somebody writes me, I'm going to write him back. And,
wait, so you sent that email already?
Yeah, and I treat them with the respect that... And if it works, it works. It doesn't.
But to me, that's why live at this week. This is why the show is important. This Comedy Cellar show is going to be very important to the national dialogue about stand-up, because it will also be the only show every week that has the potential to do something offensive and show people all of the ranges of what comedy is, so that when they go out to a comedy club, they'll do their homework. And I honestly feel like this is an opportunity for people to get reacclimated about. You can be mad about whatever the hell you want in all these other quadrants, but at the comedy club on the stage, this is safe. Is
the Comedy Central in accord with that point of view of the show? Do they want all different points of view, or do they want to keep it politically
correct? That remains to be seen, because they're still a Viacom property and they're all about making money. And if people start boycotting advertisers, then you got a whole different problem.
Right. Well, that's just it. Is that media and clubs and comedy is a business. So at the end of the day, it has to be funny and it has to be an experience and it has to be entertaining.
Commerce and free speech ain't never mixed well.
Yeah. All right.
Well, if we can somehow thread that needle, we'll be in good shape. You know.
Although maybe free speech and capitalism do fit, because the markets reward free speech, ultimately. Comedy clubs exist because not everybody is, you know, put in a straitjacket.
That's true.
All right, we got to end up. I want to say, you know, I did these two podcasts. I want to give a nice shout out to Mike Pesca on Slate Magazine, The Gist. You know this podcast? Yeah. He did he was extremely above the belt. We had a very good conversation. He did not ambush me. And I wasn't totally happy with the way they edited it, but I know they edited it for time. And, you know, people always be fussy about that. But that was a very good experience. Thank you, Mike Pesca. And The Daily, I'm not happy with those guys. But what can I do about it?
Oh, it was still a good interview.
But it was still a good interview. Yeah, you got your point across.
You don't know what's on the cutting room floor. You don't know.
Well, be that as it may, it seems like a lot of the emails you received were favorable.
Yes. Yes.
So I think you made your point admirably, even given the cuts that were made.
Yeah. All right. Good
Watch the Comedy Cellar show, live from the Comedy Cellar, Comedy Central, Friday nights.
Friday nights, 11 p.m.
And
11
Dan,
p.m.
I hope I watch it and I see you on
it. Well, I hope
I'm
to
really
be.
Hoping.
I hope to be.
He will be. I mean, I don't know about this week, but he's definitely going to be on it.
Oh, yeah. Email us.
Email us. podcast@comedyseller.com. Roy Wood, James Altucher. Thank you very much, everybody. Good night.